It's Wednesday, the 27th of August. Here's your Biz News Briefing. I'm Alec Hogg. Well, there's been some groundbreaking news. Yanni Mouton, one of the great entrepreneurs of South Africa, the man who started PSG, was instrumental in starting Capitec and in many ways the brains behind Curo, today announced that his legacy is going to be turning Curo from a for-profit into a non-profit organization. More of that story later. Also coming up today, we'll have context on the poll that puts the DA ahead of the ANC. That poll was released over the weekend. Is Cyril Ramaphosa's presidency soon to end? The Water Mafia, a new Formula One team, the first one in almost a decade. Donald Trump is attacking the independence of the Fed. That's a very important story for us here in South Africa, and we have given it the full go later on in the program, explaining the context of it. We'll also have the freshest local company news, more on that Curo acquisition, 7.2 billion rand, and of course, a tailpiece. But let's kick off with the DA's internal polling, which has proven to have been amongst the most accurate in South Africa over many years. But the latest one, which was published in Report newspaper over the weekend and then also on Biz News yesterday, when our columnist John Mattison suggested that these results will put the DA in pole position to take over all of the major metros in South Africa, well, adding those to Cape Town, which is, it has already been ruling for quite some time. Helen Ziller, as we reported on the program yesterday here on Biz News Briefing, has treated those polls with some circumspection. But is she being cautious or completely truthful? I got hold of the polling guru here in South Africa, Gareth van Onselen of Victory, and asked him, Victory Research, and asked him to give us some context.
If you take a long kind of 20-year view, then it makes almost perfect sense that the ANC is in decline and that particularly in urban centres, in metropolitans, the DA in particular, and no doubt other opposition parties are doing relatively well because that's where their strengths are. The ANC's decline was slow for the first 10 years, then it picked up pace, and it seems to be, all things being relative, collapsing now. And it's going to be most hurt by the local government elections, which is its worst platform to perform on. In the other direction, it is the best platform for opposition voters. They turn out disproportionately high compared to ANC voters, and so opposition parties tend to do disproportionately well. And these are numbers concern opposition strongholds, urban centers, and key metropolitans where the opposition is at its strongest. So it all kind of makes sense in a big picture view. The only outstanding thing is perhaps the extent of the ANC's decline. Down to 30% is dramatic and makes it very difficult for it to recover, even up to 40%, I would say, in the next year or so. And it puts certain governments on the table or within the reach of the DA as a standalone government, which is what it's always wanted, avoiding coalitions or at least keeping them as small as possible. So those seem to be the kind of things that we're going to have to look out for if these polls are any indication of what's ahead.
What about Johannesburg? How are you reading it in the light of their most recent polls?
Johannesburg is really a disappointment. I mean, as someone who has an affinity for opposition politics and the DA in particular, I really have regarded it as the biggest potential bubble of potential for the Democratic Alliance and its biggest failure in terms of being able to capitalize on that. And there are many reasons for that that are complicated and goes to, you know, in some instances, an over-focus on the Western Cape at the expense of Johannesburg, poor leadership choices and a poor caliber of public representatives in Johannesburg over a long period of time, which is exemplified by the fact that they've had to import mayoral candidates, you know, from Musi to Herman Mashaba. The talk is now Helen will be the next candidate in Joburg. And why is it that Joburg is not producing its own candidates? And so the DA's always got great potential in Johannesburg. It always has the potential to get up to 40%. It never seems to capitalize on that in a meaningful way. Maybe if Zilla does stand, she brings a massive amount of brand value and capital to that thing. It can make a fundamental difference for the DA. But, you know, its historical record in that metro is underperforming, and I'll need to see it before I believe it, to be frank. Maybe this year will be different, but, you know, one has to take some value out of trends and previous performance.
We'll have more from Gareth in the tail piece today. Stick around for that one. And the question now that's going around amongst politicians is Cyril Ramaphosa's days numbered? And this follows the lodging of a vote of no confidence in Parliament when it reconvenes in less than 2 weeks' time. Chris Steyn's Sunday show guest, Ronaldo Gous, had some pretty interesting points to make on this issue. Let's have a listen.
I'm looking forward to for the next week or two. I think Parliament goes back relatively soon, and then we've got the motion of no confidence against Cyril Ramaphosa. And I think it's going to be an interesting time, because if we go along the route of a secret ballot, all gaan fireworks wees, Chris. All gaan groot fireworks wees. Because people are saying, oh, well, you know, the DA don't have enough support. Remember what I told you about the factional battle in the ANC? If it is a secret ballot and only you and God know who you voted against or who you voted for, then we're going to see Cyril Ramaphosa go, and that's going to cause fireworks, because then things are going to change drastically. Whomever replaces Cyril Ramaphosa, I believe, will not want the GNU. Because we have seen, you know, even with Gigaba and Mtunu, vocal critics against the GNU government. So it's going to be interesting to see what plays out. People should just be aware of when Parliament goes back. I believe it's Mkhonto weSizwe that put the motion of no confidence against Cyril Ramaphosa. So that is going to be the entertainment that we need. Stock up on your popcorn, stock up on your favorite cool drink, and maybe take a day off of work to enjoy the circus that's about to play out in Parliament for South Africa.
Fascinating. Ronaldo Gous is a former Member of Parliament and a local councillor. Well, Bongani Bingwa is famous as a television presenter and also on Radio 702, but he's a dab hand at investigative journalism as well. And this was just too good not to share with you. He posted this on social media this week about the water mafia and his upfront experience.
So here's a question. How bad is South Africa's corruption problem? Let's take the water mafia. There are people who deliberately damage our water infrastructure so they can win tenders to be able to deliver water to residents who now no longer have any other option but to go to the trucks. Now here's the catch. The more water these trucks can go and collect, the more they can invoice, because nobody actually checks if the water they collect was indeed delivered.
So then, actually,
so there I am, minding my own business, when I encounter a water delivery truck dumping thousands and thousands of liters on a random suburban street. I actually got out of the car and I asked the driver what he was doing. He said, no, he had to dump all of that water because his truck is stuck and it won't be able to move unless he dumps it. Do you want to know what the kicker was for me? There were chaps on the side of the road watching me take videos of this whole fiasco. And they were encouraging this man who's dumping the water to grab my phone. Because how dare I expose all of this? These are chaps who are probably unemployed, just watching all of this on the side of the road that had nothing to do with this truck. They had no dog in the fight. But they were incensed that somebody could dare to object. And that, my friends, is how bad corruption is in South Africa.
Bongani. It reminds me of what André de Ruyter said was happening at Eskom when he was in control there, that the trucks that were delivering coal, or was it rock, to the Eskom power stations were not being checked either. And there was a man called Mark van der Riet who called this out when the Guptas were in power, and Mark paid for it with his life. I wish that Eskom one day, just one day, would do some kind of a memorial to a man like Mark, who put his life on the line and actually died as a consequence of the abuse that he had to sustain as a result of being a whistleblower.
Cody from Paul has sold multiple vehicles to We Buy Cars. Suspicious?
I think so.
Is that a crime?
No. Where are you getting the cars?
I buy them and I sell them at the spot, like a normal person.
Okay.
No, man, I'm just an accounting student. I know a good deal when I see one.
That's Excel. Meant. What's more stressful, tax season or selling a car at We Buy Cars?
Tax season, obviously.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Well, there's lots more coming up in the program today, including that story about the Yanni Mouton Foundation and Curo. But let's go on to something that is of wide appeal, and General Motors' brand Cadillac is to become the first new entry into Formula One in almost a decade. It's going to invest billions of dollars, and it has become only the second new team since 2010. So the first since 2016 and the second since 2010. Its cars will be driven by two top performers, the 10-time Grand Prix winning Finn, Valtteri Bottas, and fellow veteran, 6 times winning Mexican driver, Sergio Perez. Here's our partners at Bloomberg.
We're so excited about these two. I mean, they're both, you know, characters. You know, they have storied careers in Formula One, but they're not done. This is the next chapter. You know, they're the chosen two for the Cadillac Formula One team to hit the grid in 2026, and we're super excited about them.
So how long are you giving the team before you expect that you're going to win a race or a championship?
No, it is going to be a process. I mean, Formula One's the pinnacle of motorsport. It's so difficult. The smallest difference can make a huge difference on track. But I think that's where their experience comes in. You know, we'll have over 1,000 people working on this team. And so a lot of times people just think about the driver of the car, but it's a team sport, you know. And so that leadership and experience, knowing what to expect for a brand new team. So even though we have all these experienced people in Formula One, they've got to work together. We've got to build team chemistry. And so Checo and Valtteri, you know, are the perfect choice to help, you know, just bring that experience, give feedback on the car, get the team working together. They know what to expect. They've been there before.
So you're going to kick it off with Ferrari powertrains.
Yep.
You bring your own Cadillac powertrains in a few years down the road. But I'm guessing you're going to have to pay almost $500 million to get in, and then what, $250 a year? How long until you think you can become champions?
You know, it's going to take a few years, but you know, we're very excited about that. We're committed to this process. It is a multi-billion-dollar investment in total. You know, we'll have over 600,000 square feet of manufacturing under roof in the U.S. between Indianapolis and Charlotte, you know, between the team and the power unit company. And all those people working together. We also have a base of operations in Silverstone. So this is a global operation for Cadillac Formula One. And so really when we hit the grid, you know, it's a new chassis and a new power unit next year. So it kind of mixes up the competitive landscape in Formula One. And so we get to figure out where, you know, where do we stack up against these teams? None of these cars will have been on the track, you know, together when we get there. And then what I'll be looking at is what does our progress look like? What's the upward trajectory of that team? Because that really gets to the question of how long till we win a race, you know, how long till we get on a podium. But the ambitions for this team are high, and the resources are tremendous. And so together with General Motors, with Mark Royce and the tremendous team there, Mary and Mark, you know, we're going to be working hard to make sure that we're competing at the top of the food chain.
Donald Trump hasn't found much love, though, in the international markets. People are getting really worried about his most recent attack on the Federal Reserve. Now, let me give you context on this. A central bank is responsible for keeping inflation under control, and that's the way that it keeps the currency, which is the asset that you and I have, or the measurement for the assets that we have in our currency. It's responsible for keeping that currency stable or not depreciating, and it does that primarily by keeping inflation under control. You see here in South Africa, since our inflation's been under control, the rand hasn't been falling like a stone. However, Donald Trump doesn't like the way that the central bank in the United States, which sets interest rates for the whole world, it doesn't like the way that the Federal Reserve is operating at the moment. And he has been moving aggressively to try and change that. He wants interest rates lower, which could spark all kinds of unintended consequences, not least on inflation. And already economists are saying, hang on a minute, Trump, by pushing up these tariffs or introducing these tariffs, you are going to bring inflation into the equation now in the United States again. So lots of issues about that. Let's have a listen to three of our partners in a little package that we've put together. The first is from The Economist. Then we will hear from Bloomberg. And finally, context from the FT News Briefing.
On Sunday, Donald Trump declared that he wanted to fire Lisa Cook, a governor of the Federal Reserve, over claims she had lied on mortgage applications. Ms. Cook has not been charged with any crime, although the Department of Justice says it plans to open an investigation. She has refused to resign, calling her would-be sacking unlawful. Pressure on the Fed has been rising for months. Mr. Trump wants the central bank to cut interest rates faster, a tall order when tariffs have kept inflation above its 2% target. He has mused about firing Jerome Powell, its chairman, citing a costly renovation of the Fed's offices in Washington as a potential pretext. But the president's power to dismiss top Fed officials is legally uncertain and, so far, untested. A Supreme Court ruling from 1935 prevents the president from firing governors without cause. But recent rulings by the justices have weakened that precedent. What happens next will be up to the courts.
News when you want it with Bloomberg News Now. I'm Stephen Carroll. The White House is exploring ways to exert more influence over the Fed's 12 regional banks, including how their presidents are vetted and chosen. That's according to sources who've spoken to Bloomberg. The reporting comes as Donald Trump says he's ready for a legal fight with Fed Governor Lisa Cook, adding that he's already looking for her replacement.
Well, we have some very good people for that position, and I think we have some very good people. We're down to, I mean, I think I maybe in my own mind have somebody that I like, but I deal with Scott and I deal with Howard, and we're dealing with a lot of people actually that are going to be involved in that decision ultimately. It's a very important decision.
U.S. President, they're referring to the Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and the Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, who would both be expected to weigh in on any possible successor. In a statement released on Tuesday, the Federal Reserve said it will abide by any court ruling regarding Cook. If Trump succeeds, he could secure a dovish majority on the Fed board as he pushes for lower interest rates. We got reaction from former Fed Vice Chair Lael Brainard.
I think the Federal Reserve is in an incredibly difficult position here, but you have to remember, this is not about an individual governor. This is really an unprecedented attack on the independence of the Federal Reserve as an institution.
Former Fed Vice Chair Lael Brainard speaking there as concerns grow that President Trump's unprecedented and escalating attack on the Federal Reserve runs the risk of driving long-term borrowing costs higher.
You
you have heard us talk a lot about the independence of the Federal Reserve lately. Donald Trump has been threatening to fire Jay Powell because the Fed chair has refused to lower interest rates this year. But now Fed independence has hit its biggest challenge yet. Trump said he was firing Fed Governor Lisa Cook late Monday night, and in response, long-term U.S. Treasuries sold off. Here with me to discuss what this means for the central bank, markets, and the U.S. economy is the FT's Claire Jones. So, Claire, with the potential firing of Lisa Cook, our colleague Chris Giles wrote, quote, "There is every reason to fear for the survival of a key pillar of U.S. and global economic stability." Those are really intense words. What does this whole situation tell you about the precariousness around central bank independence right now?
I think it all depends on whether or not Lisa Cook wins this case. Now, the president on Monday night, rather unexpectedly, said that he was firing Lisa Cook with immediate effect. By the end of the night, Cook and a lawyer had both responded to say that she would not resign and that they were going to challenge the case against Trump. The reason why Trump thinks he's got a case against Lisa Cook is that one of his allies and the director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, Bill Pulte, who's been a very, very, very big critic of the Fed, has accused Cook of mortgage fraud. While the DOJ is taking up the case and investigating it, there's still no sense about how that investigation will conclude. Cook has denied any wrongdoing and has said she'll answer questions on the transactions at a point in the future.
Claire, I want to talk a little bit about the market response to this. There was a sell-off in long-term treasuries. Yields went up on Tuesday. What were investors so nervous about?
I think it tells you that markets don't see what's happened to Lisa Cook as an isolated event. It's part of a multi-pronged attack against the Fed. We've had kind of posts on Truth Social calling for lower interest rates. We've had Trump and his allies attacking the Federal Reserve's renovation. And we now have them attacking directly a member of the Fed's board. I think the sense that investors have is that if Trump is successful in undermining that independence and their credibility, then the US will be less effective at controlling inflation. And what that means is it's going to cost the US government more to borrow.
And it might also give central bank governors around the world pause, because if politicians can start directing the way that interest rates go in a country, well, it's predictable. Politicians want to cut interest rates because it's popular. And the more popular you can get as a politician, the happier you are. Of course, that hammers the economy, because who gets hurt when inflation goes up? Mostly the poor. Seems as though the poor are the people who always seem to be sucking the hind tit. Whoa. Anyway, not in this case. Not in this case. And thanks to Yanni Mouton, one of South Africa's great entrepreneurs, there is going to be a direct attack on education in South Africa. It's quite a statement. But this morning, the Yanni Mouton Stichting, the foundation that houses the wealth of this great entrepreneur who started PSG, was fired at the age of 50 from a stockbroking firm called Senecaon Mouton and Kitsoff, him being the M in the Mouton. He started PSG, was instrumental in getting Capitec off the ground and also getting Curo off the ground. Well, his foundation is going to be bidding 7.2 billion rand to the shareholders of Curo, giving them a little bit of cash and a lot of shares in Capitec and PSG in return for their Curo shares, the intention being to turn Curo, which is a private schools business, into a non-profit from a profit. It'll change the way that Curo goes about life, and is Yanni Mouton's approach, or I suppose today one should say the Mouton family's approach, towards assisting in attacking the education crisis in South Africa. And I've never seen anything quite like this on that front. Well done, Mr. Mouton, and let's hope that shareholders act in the spirit with which the offer's been made. The Curo share price was up 50% today on this news. AfriMat, a diversified mining and materials group, which is been falling recently on the concerns that shareholders have that it's able to turn around a massive cement plant that it bought in Lichtenberg. Today brought out a pre-close interim numbers for the 6 months to the end of June. And there's good and bad news. On the one hand, some of the operating assets are doing well and at the cement plant, the IT systems are starting to deliver good savings. On the downside, the cement division is continuing to battle with unreliable kilns. The anthracite side of the business is being hurt by the closure of ferrochrome smelters here in South Africa, and the Transnet problem continues to hurt its iron ore. But, well, overall, shareholders quite liked the report, the share price up by 2%. Before we leave you, here's our tailpiece as promised. Just to close off with, I was quite surprised to see Lindiwe Mazibuko has joined the ANC. You do know her from a past life, I guess you might call it. Were you as surprised?
Are you joking? I didn't know that.
Is that fake news? I don't know.
You just never really know nowadays. Surprised.
Yeah, yeah. There was a
no. It was that quite sounds well like an April Fool's joke. I don't think that's
all right. So there's an August Fool's joke. Thanks, Gareth. I think I'll have to cut that out then of this conversation. But thank you.
I would be astounded for your insights. No, not at all, Alec.
Gareth van Onselen pouring cold water on a bit of news that's been cheering certain ANC supporters on social media. Let's hope that he's also not wrong and that Lindiwe, who was involved in the national dialogue, perhaps that's where there was a little bit of confusion. Anyway, that's your briefing for today. Remember, you can watch the full interview with Gareth and many others on BizNews TV on YouTube. But from me, Alec Hogg, until tomorrow, cheerio.